What an amazing story. An accidental church that just popped up because of people's love and people's ministry where they are. We are in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 5, continuing on from where we were last week, Luke chapter 5, starting in verse 12. Man, I love the couple of things that he said in that video. He said that people were looking for a church around them because they didn't see one that was fitting, that they felt fit to them, or that they would be welcome at. We're looking at a little bit of that this morning in our passage. We are looking here, Luke chapter 5, Jesus cleansing the leper. And the title of the sermon is, Nobody Cleans the Soap. Have you noticed that? Soap just kind of cleans itself. We're here in chapter 5, starting in verse 12. Let me read this for us. It says, And it happened, when he was in a certain city, that behold, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus, and he fell on his face and implored him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then he put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately the leprosy left him, and he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest, and make an offering for your cleansing and as a testimony to them, just as Moses commanded. However, the report went around concerning him all the more, and great multitudes came together to hear and to be healed by him of their infirmities. So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. Let's pray this morning. Jesus, I love you. And God, thank you for this word to us, and Father, I pray that you would help us to be receptive to what you have to say. God, let us be examining who we are and who you've called us to be, and God, the places that you've sent us. And God, just be with us this morning as we study, and Father, just get me out of the way and just speak your word. I love you, Jesus. In your name I pray. Amen. No doubt you have heard before of people that go around and they do the swab testing, probably. Miss Wallace has done this in her high school class, swab testing for germs in a number of different places and locations. And the things every time that I see, that whenever somebody does one of those tests, I just kind of get a little bit germophobic. Are you guys, does that ever happen to you? They swabbed a guy's beard one time and found all, I don't want to mention what they found. But there were germs in the guy's beard. And sometimes when I read those reports, I get a little bit germophobic, not a lot. I mean, I have eaten a cookie off the ground before, but it just overwhelms your thoughts for a little bit. But what I was thinking was, have you guys been to a public restroom? And over there by the sink, they have that little soap dispenser. How many people do you think touch that soap dispenser right before you touch it? Probably a lot, hopefully a lot, because otherwise they're walking out and touching the door, right? We hope that they go to the soap dispenser, but no matter how many germs, if someone has swabbed that thing, please don't tell me, all right? I don't need to know that, but I can just imagine that there's a number of germs on there, and yet the best thing you can do is to what? To wash your hands, because as soon as you touch that thing and get some soap on your hands, that soap goes to work, right? And whatever disgusting things you just accumulated from just one little touch is just washed away, and you're rejoicing, and you dry your hands and head out the door, hopefully. Anyway, that's the picture that we're looking at today. There is something peculiar about Jesus, and I want you to notice that it uses the word clean. Over and over and over, it uses the word clean, or a form of the word clean, cleanse. It's an important idea to this passage because it has this incredibly important Old Testament significance. And so look again at verse 12. It says, it happened when he, that's he, Jesus, you can see it's a capital H there. And it happened when he, Jesus, was in a certain city that behold, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus. And he fell on his face and implored him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. We have this outrageous declaration of faith. And you and I don't really get the outrageousness of this declaration. In the Old Testament and even in the New Testament, the word leprosy was kind of this junk drawer category for a lot of skin diseases that, you know, it could just be eczema, it could just be a number of different things. But within that junk drawer is the Hansen's disease leprosy, which is a long-term infection by bacteria that covers the whole body, and it damages nerves and the respiratory tract and the skin and the eyes. And that nerve damage actually does worse things because it creates an inability to feel pain, which is really the danger, because when you can't feel pain, you can't feel the cut on the foot that you just were walking on. You can't feel whenever you've broken a limb. You can't feel the wounds from unnoticed injuries. And so you have burns and cuts and other injuries that wind up, people end up losing their fingers and losing their arms and losing a lot of the cartilage in their nose breaks down. It's really a terrifying disease. And it overcomes, it takes over an entire person. And here's the thing. It is thought to be spread through a cough or a contact with fluid from a person whose nose is infected or a person who's infected. In 1995, there was a film that came out called Outbreak. And in that movie, Outbreak, it's about this monkey that somebody had brought this monkey into the United States, and this virus was contracted in California, and somebody had gotten it, and then it was started to spread, and they're trying to figure out what it was. And there's this one scene where everybody's in a movie theater, and they're all just laughing and watching, and this person laughs, and you see these little germs fly out of this person's mouth, and then all over this movie theater, and then it's going into everybody else's mouth. I don't know if you want to go back and watch that movie. No, you don't. It was a terrifying scene, especially if you happen to be watching that movie in a theater. You started going, I don't want to be here anymore, right? I mean, it's kind of like 2020. Remember in 2020, like right after we started meeting together again and someone like down the pew from you coughed and you started sliding away from them, right? Right? Still today, somebody will cough and you'll just kind of look at them like that. You'll slip away a little bit. Go wash your hands real quick. That's the picture here. This outbreak, they didn't know how it happened or where it happened. And so in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, even in modern day, they have leper colonies that someone who is infected, especially with Hansen's disease, please go over there. They actually banned it. They said you couldn't be in town. But because of the infectiousness of leprosy, they created these leper colonies. But not only that, Leviticus 13, 45 to 46, you don't have to turn there. But it just says that a person with a serious skin disease is to wear torn clothes and messy hair and cover their face. And they're supposed to cry out, unclean, unclean, as a warning to those around them. That person was supposed to live alone in a place by themselves outside the camp or outside the city. They had to leave their family. They had to leave their friends behind. They couldn't work. And so often the only thing they could do was become a beggar. It also had a spiritual stigma, because if you had leprosy, according to that Leviticus 13 passage, it gave instructions for identifying leprosy. So if someone had some skin condition to come up, the people with small cases of skin disease were evaluated and either pronounced clean or unclean by the priest. Just pronounced. They just looked at it. And there was this process. The Bible actually gives this process for identifying whether it's a growing one or a not growing, and even just to describe what kind of skin disease it is. Well, the priests were only able to look at the infection and declare whether the person was clean or unclean. And so the leper who was declared clean, he has to go through this week-long process of examination and washing his clothes and shaving his head, including his beards and his eyebrows. He had to shave his eyebrows so that they could examine him. And he couldn't participate in worship. He couldn't participate in the tabernacle. He couldn't participate in the temple. In other words, they are cut off from family, from community, and even in participating in the worship of God. Ostracized. You can imagine, sometimes there was this connotation, well, if you have leprosy, you can't worship God. You must be one of those people, one of the bad people. Obviously, you're being punished. Obviously, God is doing something to punish you. There was no way, however, in all the examinations that the priests had, all they could do was identify whether it was a bad leprosy or not a bad leprosy. All they could do was to say you're either clean or you're unclean. All they could do was to identify it. Nobody could make anyone clean. Moreover, the Old Testament talks mostly about the unclean thing making whatever else it contacts unclean as well. If you, a clean person, ready for worship, happen to stop by your friend's house and that friend's house is unclean, guess what? You're now unclean and you can't go to worship. If you, as a clean person, happen to bump into or have some sort of inadvertent accidental contact with a dead person or with some dead animal, all of a sudden you are now unclean and you cannot participate in worship. A clean person who comes in contact with unclean instruments, unclean people, unclean places are all of a sudden unclean. That's exactly why many of the people didn't want Jesus' body to be on the cross overnight. And they rushed him and put him in the tomb. And they didn't want to prepare the body because they couldn't participate in Passover or participate in worship in the Sabbath. If they were unclean by having touched Jesus' body. That's why they came back again on Sunday. There's a TV show called Scrubs. And there's this one episode where they show, kind of try to show the transmission of disease by showing green. You know how in The Wizard of Oz, when they added color, all of a sudden it was like, oh, you can have movies in color. The TV show Scrubs had this person blew their nose and their hands kind of turned this color green. And then they went over and shook someone else's hand and that person's hand turned green. And they went over and put their hand on someone else's back. And eventually it just kind of works its way through the hospital so that eventually it gets to one person who just innocently picks up a Kleenex, throws it in the trash and walks into a patient's room and says goodbye. And the point of it is, hey, that's how it happens. This disease spreads until finally it comes to a person who is susceptible. We understand that from a medical perspective, but this also carried significant spiritual connotations, unclean and unfit. There was no way to make anyone else clean. You just had to wait for yourself to be declared clean again. But more than that, anything that touched the unclean thing became unclean. Here's the outrageous, are you ready for the outrageous thing of this story? Here's the outrageous thing. Here's this man who was full of leprosy. That means he's got the bad kind, right? He's got the bad kind that nobody wants to be around. He's got his hair crazy. He's got the torn clothes. He is full of leprosy. It says he came into town, or at least close to town, and he came close to Jesus, bowing down, and he says, "You can make me clean." That's a declaration of faith they wouldn't say to the priest, because they know the priest can't do anything. But this man heard of Jesus, and he went to Jesus and he said, "Listen, if you are willing, you have the ability, I know you do. If you are willing, you can be clean." And having heard of Jesus' power, he runs to him. And not only that, he risked his life. He risked his standing. He risked a lot to come to Jesus. I don't know if you've seen the movie WALL-E by Disney, by Pixar. And there's this scene where WALL-E gets onto this unclean little earth robot, gets onto this very clean space thing. And as it's running around, there's this other robot whose job is to clean the places. And it finds where WALL-E has been. And it starts cleaning all these places. He's tracking all over until he gets to this room where WALL-E has been everywhere. And he just freaks out and he starts, I'm not connecting with you. All right, some of you are older than that. Here we go. You'll remember this. Remember when your mom wiped the floor? Well, she mopped the floor, right? And she had it just perfect and clean. And what did you do? Come tromping through there with your muddy shoes. You barely lived through that, didn't you? Yeah. You barely lived through it. That's the picture. that as this guy is running into town or coming into town or close to town, there's people that are with Jesus and watching Jesus. And the disciples are, I mean, he just had some disciples that were there. They're not sure, really, what should we do? They must have been horrified at the idea that this man's callous disregard for the law and disregard for public hygiene would allow him to even come into this place. And yet this man, in his outrageous faith, says, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." But verse 13 shows something more outrageous. It shows Jesus' outrageous response. Watch this. "Then he put out his hand and touched him, saying, 'I am willing, be cleansed.' Immediately the leprosy left him." There's a TV show called Seinfeld. In one episode of Seinfeld, Jerry was in the bathroom, and he was, I think he was brushing his teeth or doing something. He accidentally knocked his girlfriend's toothbrush off the counter and into the toilet. And if you know Jerry, he does not like germs. Big germaphobe. And so he kind of freaks out. What do? I can't leave it there. So he puts his hand into the toilet. It's clean. Puts his hand in the toilet, puts the toothbrush on the counter, and just starts furiously washing his hands. He thinks he's finally got it all done. And he looks up in the mirror, and there's his girlfriend with her toothbrush just brushing her teeth. And the whole rest of the episode is he doesn't want to kiss her, he doesn't want to talk to her, he doesn't want to be around her, right? That's the picture. So I want you to get this. Everybody is like watching Jesus. This leprosy man, full of leprosy, runs into town, and it says that he fell down. He says, "If you were willing, you can make me clean." And what does Jesus do? He reaches out and he touches him. He touches him. That's outrageous. But think about how gentle and kind and gracious that is. That this man might not have been touched by family for who knows how long. That this person hasn't had human contact. And Jesus reaches out and grabs him. He touches him first. And he says, "I am willing." He dignifies this man's humanity. He points to him. Jesus completely could have, multiple times throughout the New Testament, he healed the Syrophoenician's woman's daughter just from a distance. He's healed the centurion's servant in Luke 7 by just saying, "Yes, he's healed." The official's daughter in John 4, Jesus heals him from a distance. Jesus has the ability just to command, 3 feet or 10 feet or however many feet away it is, he could just command it and the person would be healed. But Jesus touched him first. There's two significant things about that. Jesus acknowledged his humanity, the hurt of being cut off from human contact, the suffering from a disease with no cure, the suffering from a stigma, not only of being cut off from the temple worship of God, but cut off from community. That this beggar on the road, he's used to people just walking by and not even really noticing him, just throwing some coins. Or just saying, "Don't bother me." Considering him unworthy and untouchable, Jesus touched him. But then, for the first time in history, the clean thing made the unclean thing clean. I might have lost you. Let me say that again. The clean thing made the unclean thing clean. Every other instance, every other time, if you're clean and ready for worship and you come in contact with unclean, you're unclean. But not this. Jesus, this gives us a picture of Jesus' holiness, that he is set apart, that he is sacred. It is a characteristic of God. Brother Richard shared last week in calling the disciples that as soon as Peter saw Jesus, he said, "Get away from me, Jesus. I'm an unclean man." And Brother Richard pointed to Isaiah and Isaiah's commission, that Isaiah, when he stood there in the full presence of God, he was standing there and he said, "I am a man of unclean lips and I come from an unclean people of unclean lips. Woe is me." In other words, "Oh no, I'm dead." That Isaiah passage says that a seraphim, an angel, comes up and takes a coal and it touches his lips. I don't know if that's good or bad, right? It's a symbolic, it's this purifying thing. The coal touched him. It says, there, this has purified you. This has the idea sometimes whenever you're melting metal down to pull off the dross, all the stuff that when you pull metal, melt gold down, you pull out the things that are not gold and it becomes more pure gold. This heat purifies Isaiah's lips. It atones for him. Jesus is the living embodiment of God's holiness. And Jesus cleanses us. Jesus is like that soap that we talked about earlier, that wherever you wash your hands with soap, this is true. It doesn't matter where you wash your hands with soap. I mean, it could be liquid soap, bar soap. I mean, whatever soap, if you can get your hands on soap and water, you can have a more clean experience, because what it's actually doing is breaking down the oil barrier that holds all of those germs in. And that's what soap does, is it gets past that barrier. And that's what God's holiness does for us. That it breaks through that sin that has been infecting us since Adam. And it purifies us. That God, Jesus never loses his holiness, but instead his holiness cleanses and sets apart those who come to him. He says, I'm willing. And then he says, be clean. And the physical cleansing is a testimony to the spiritual authority and the holiness of Jesus, because then they begin to say, what kind of person even is this who makes the unclean person clean? Even the priest can't do that. This can only come by the power of God. That if Jesus can make the unclean person clean, surely he can do things like forgive sin and make the unholy person holy. Because we're all sinners in Adam and we're only made righteous in Christ. It's only through his death, burial, and resurrection, when we turn to him and say and confess our sin and say, I know that I've messed up and I need your grace, and we ask him to forgive us, that's the only way that we can be made righteous. There's nothing we can do on our own. You see that outrageous request, that outrageous response, and now I want you to see this outrageous need. It says in verse 14, he, Jesus, charged him, tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing as a testimony to them, just as Moses commanded. However, the report went around concerning him all the more, and a great multitudes came together to hear and to be healed by him of their infirmities. So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. One time I was at an education minister's conference in Nashville. We went to Lifeway. And part of the weekend that we had with all these education ministers is they carried us downtown Nashville. I think they gave us a ride down to this restaurant, the spaghetti restaurant in downtown Nashville. And they just decided for just a treat, they'll let us walk back. It wasn't a long walk if you've ever been to downtown Nashville. They let us walk from the restaurant back to the place where we were, even to the hotel where they were housing us. And as we were walking up, there were just, I mean, you guys, if you haven't been to Nashville, there's just all kinds of bars along the street, and there's live music and loud music. There's people playing music on the street. There's people who painted themselves and are just posing for no reason. There's a lot of stuff going on the street, and there's a lot of traffic. It's not really a bad place at all. I mean, it's very clean. It's very not a lot of crime, not a lot of dangerous things. But as I'm walking along, I'm kind of taking in the sights and looking around. And then here's the thing that I noticed: there was a guy with us. I think he was an education minister with us, and he was walking along, and he felt like we were walking too slow and taking in the sights a little bit too much, and his conscience could not bear it. And he said, I got to go. And he left. He went back to the hotel. He said, I can't be out here by these bars, by this stuff. And here's the funny thing. I was like, dude, this is not bad at all. I don't know what you're concerned about, right? But there was he had this feeling of unholiness around him, this uncleanness around him. And it's not like really that everybody there was unholy or unclean. I mean, there were people on the street. We were on the street. Surely he didn't think, this guy, I'm not hanging around with Ronnie anymore. You know, that might have been what he thought. But he just couldn't bear being there anymore. But there were certainly people there who were far from God. No doubt there were people in the bars who were drowning their lives in alcohol, trying to numb the pain, trying to run from their anger or from their sorrow. No doubt there were people who were looking for love in a string of illicit relationships. No doubt that there were people who were not good or not bad, but they were just simply distant. It reminded me of whenever Jesus talked to the Pharisees and he said, whenever we played the flute, you didn't dance, and whenever we sang a dirge, you didn't mourn. He said, whenever John the Baptist came fasting and doing nothing, you said, nope. Whenever Jesus came feasting and celebrating, you said, a friend of sinners. There was nothing that they could do. Nothing. Their holiness would not allow anything except only the things that look like them. Jesus' compassion is described as looking at people as sheep without a shepherd. That he loved them, that he wanted to rescue them. And these religious elites were constantly critiquing friends of sinners, they said. There's so many stories of people who have been hurt by the church that they've told me over the years. People who have been singled out for the way that they dress, singled out for the way that they look, singled out for their race, singled out for their income level, for their family history, or even their newness to the community. Sometimes people, whenever we talk about abortion in the church and the wrong of abortion, some people go, they're talking about me. I had an abortion. These people must not like me. Sometimes when we talk about single mothers, a single mother will say, they're talking about me. They must not like me. And sometimes people have this hurt, and whenever we talk about what the Bible talks about, that we have to talk about because the Bible does give us what holiness is and what we're supposed to pursue, but we recognize we live in a fallen world, and there are a number of people who feel unclean and hurt and broken. I love this picture that Jesus says, hey, don't tell anyone, but go make an offering as a testimony to them. Go show the priests. The priest can only declare who's clean and unclean. Go tell them who made you clean. It was Jesus. Go make the offering. This is not about the healing, but about being restored to the worship of God and the community of people. The healing has already taken place, and now there is restoration. There is a testimony to the religious leaders that Jesus is cleansing and restoring people under the Lord. And Jesus doesn't want the message of restoration he brings to be lost in a flurry of requests for miracles. He just wants them to see Jesus is here to do more than just make people not sick. He's here to clean, to cleanse. And so Jesus' message in the synagogue of Nazareth a few verses ago, that now is the time of the fulfillment of the Messiah, is being fulfilled here. Undoubtedly, the word got out, and multitudes of people came to be healed, but also to hear. It says they came to hear and to be healed. Jesus' mission of preaching and sharing, even though he was rejected in Nazareth, they wouldn't listen to him. He was swarmed in Capernaum by people who drove there, who went there because he drove the demons out of people and he healed the sick. Well, now people are gathering disciples in multitudes to come near to hear. I thought about that education minister in Nashville, and I thought, I can't believe that guy. We didn't want to stand around these people. And then God brought me some conviction. He said, Ronnie, I'm glad you were willing to stand there, but who is going to tell them? Because there are good people there. There are people who are lost. There are people that are distant. There are people that feel rejected and put out and ignored. And just you standing there doesn't do a lot. Thank you for your kindness towards others. But what about Jesus? I asked John Williams if I could share this. I remember the day that John was saved. It was the old church. And John hadn't grown up really in church. And I remember at the end of the service, Brother Joe had given an invitation. And old John, I mean, not old John, but John... came barreling down that outside aisle, went up and talked to Brother Joe. And you know how when people pray and ask Christ, or they come up the front. We usually have them stand at the front, right? Not John. As soon as he finished talking to Brother Joe, right back up the aisle to his seat, you know. John was kind of a shy guy, at least back then. I mean, John was radically saved because he heard the good news of the gospel. Not that there's a bunch of good people here that like a bunch of people, but that Jesus saves sinners. But more than that, John went to work and he began to tell the people there. And as he was having a conversation with a guy about, hey, this is what happened to me, the guy said, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm a Christian. And I don't know if John, I can't remember if John said it or if John just thought it, but John thought, well, why didn't you tell me? I'm right here. I'm sitting right next to you. John's not a bad guy. John hasn't murdered very many people, any people. John's a good guy, but here's the deal. John, as good as he was lost, just like you. Before you came to Christ, as good as you were lost. What you needed was someone to say, I'm willing. Be clean. Here's Jesus to make you clean. If you have never begun a relationship with Christ, that's the invitation this morning. You can do that today. There is no lost cause. There was a guy named Paul who murdered people. He became a Christian. There was a guy named Matthew who was a tax collector. He became a Christian. There was a guy who was just this criminal who had been tried and then was executed on a cross next to Jesus. He became a Christian. There's nobody who is too far away. There is no lost cause. My brother went to Beach Reach one time, and as they were, their job down there at Beach Reach during spring break was to pick up college kids, and they would drive them wherever they wanted to go, sometimes from bar to bar. But in the opportunity, in the van, they had an opportunity not only to keep drunk drivers off the road, but to have conversations with them and tell them about Jesus. And there was one conversation, the guy said, yeah, I know about Jesus, and I'm not a Christian. And I think I need to do that, but I think I need to clean myself up first. And they said, that's kind of like saying I need to take a bath. I need to get clean before I take a bath. When you come to Jesus, he's the one that cleans you. When you come to Jesus, he's the one that restores you. He's the one that makes you right with God. Come to Jesus. There is no lost cause. And so if you've never asked Christ to be the Lord of your life, whether you're a good person or a bad person, if you're a lost person, you can know Jesus today. I'd love to share with you how you can do that. If you are a believer, are you willing to love people who are distant or different from you? And if you're looking for a church home, I would love to share with you about how you can join this church. So I don't know what you need to do this morning. Perhaps you just want to spend some time at the altar praying for those who are distant from God to be brought near. Maybe you want to pray for your heart. For God to give you a heart for those around you. Maybe you have some other prayer need, whatever it is. I would love to, in just a few minutes, we'll have a time of invitation. We'll stand to our feet, and as we're singing a familiar hymn, I'll be standing at the front, and I'd love to visit with you about whatever you would like to visit with me. Let's pray. Jesus, I love you, and God, you are so good to us. God, I know sometimes the temptation is to think how good I am compared to other people. And yet, God, none of us are good apart from you. And because of your grace towards us, God, you are the reason that we have hope. And so, Father, I pray for anybody this morning that doesn't have that relationship with you. Father, I pray that you would burden them, that you would give them the desire to have that relationship with you. God, I pray that you would bring to mind people that are distant from you, and God, bring opportunities for us to share the gospel with them. And Father, bring a passion to your church. Bring a passion to your people, to love people before they're even like us. I pray, Father, that nobody would feel ostracized or pointed out, but God, that we would all see that we're all in need of you. I love you, Jesus. In your name I pray. Amen. Let's stand and have our time of invitation.